So welcome to Paradigm Shifters. We have a wonderful paradigm shifter today who is familiar to a lot of you. We talked to Chetan Parkin in 2010, and I really love the way you talk to us about the human design system, that you and I, each of us has a kind of a pattern, a design for our lives, and we're going to talk about that today and a whole lot more. Welcome to the show, Chetan.
Thank you so much, Veronica. My pleasure being here today.
Well, and I know that we talked about it before, but that was like 5 years ago. So tell people how you discovered this divination system that you use called human design.
Well, I had to hit the bottom of my rung on my ladder in my lifetime. You know, every now and again, life just says nothing's working. You need to find a new direction in life. And I happened to be in India at the time. And I went to visit this man who had a reputation, and he was called a shadow reader.
A shadow reader, exactly.
So he didn't actually read my shadow. He measured the length of my shadow. And it's a very mysterious process.
A real shadow, like, you know, reflection?
Yeah. He had me stand. He sent me outside with his son to stand in the parking lot outside his building. Uh-huh. And the son had a funny ruler, long piece of wood with kind of funny markings on it. And I didn't know what he was doing, but he was measuring the length of my shadow from the back of my heel in the midday sun.
Wow.
From that, he told his father, you know, what the measurement was. The father also wanted my date of birth. He ran some astrology from that. He also wanted to know my full name. He ran numerology from that. So he triangulated with three calculations, found exactly what he was looking for. Behind his desk, he had this huge long bookshelf with all these books that looked identical to me. But he rolls his chair along, pulls out a book, brings it back to the table, and starts telling me all about myself. And this was in 1979. To say I was shocked was a definite understatement. I had been a practicing mechanical engineer up until that time.
Oh, really? So you hadn't been in the metaphysical world or the spiritual world?
You know, I had, but I hadn't realized it.
Okay.
he kind of clarified that whole thing for me, Veronica. He just said, oh, well, the engineering thing's done. Now you're going to be doing the same work I'm doing because you know how to do this stuff. And he actually invited me to come and work with him to learn how to do this shadow reading.
Wow.
It was such a shock. I couldn't believe it. And I pondered it for probably about 30 seconds and then turned him down and said, no, I can't do that. And he just cracked up laughing. He thought that was really funny.
Well, wait a minute. Did you ever learn more about the shadow reading?
No, I never did.
It
didn't really matter. You know, because he said, when he finished laughing, he said, well, you know, I can see this is part of your nature. You're going to be doing this work whether you like it or not. So it doesn't matter if you don't work with me, you're going to be doing this work anyhow. So my suggestion is start practicing with some system or other, learn how to interact with people to tell them things about themselves, because there's a system that's going to come into your life. You're going to write books about it. You're going to introduce it to thousands of people all over the world, hundreds of thousands of people, I think he said, and it's going to completely change their lives. And he was basically talking about human design because this was he read for me in 1979, and I started practicing. I started looking at everything from tea leaves to hands to faces to cards to everything. I looked into all these.
So he did have an impact on you. Then you did actually accept that you would be doing a divination thing of sorts.
Well, you know, when something hits you right in the face, Veronica, you can't really avoid it. Mm-hmm. And he was so blatant with his thing, you know, and it was such a shock because everything he told me about myself was so accurate.
Wow. Isn't that wonderful?
Well, yes, no.
Well, it was a sort of an iconoclastic phase, I would say. But did you not get involved with Rajneesh, who now Osho?
It was my great delight to live with Osho for 11 years, yes.
And was that after the shadow reading then? Is that what you went to?
It's a funny thing. I had just arrived to be with Osho in India in 1979. And he had this extraordinary community of people around him. Every day he'd come out and discourse for 2 or 3 hours at a time, and every evening he would do more. And he would be answering all kinds of questions for all kinds of people. And he basically said, you know, there are so many questions that, look, if you've really got personal questions about yourself, there's this man you need to go and see in Bombay, now Mumbai. And he was talking about the shadow reader. And he said, this guy will answer every single question you've got, and you'll never need to ask me another question. So I was kind of timid enough in those days to not want to have a question answered in front of the whole community there around Osho. So I went and saw the shadow reader, and that was basically how it all got going.
So that was in the 70s that you were involved with Osho?
Yeah, that was 1979. And then Human Design actually came into being in 1987.
Oh,
and then
wow.
It came into my life in 1993. So, and I knew right away when I saw this Human Design chart, I knew immediately this is what the shadow reader had been talking about.
Isn't that wonderful? Well, it isn't. Human Design was then birthed in the harmonic convergence. Is that right?
Honestly, I don't know what the circumstances of it were, Veronica. It was just, it was an amazing thing that came to this world. It was a real gift that came to this world. The person that downloaded it suffered immensely during the download. I think it completely destroyed his nervous system.
Wow, really?
A very intense experience. You know, we're talking about somebody with a very, very high IQ, extraordinarily intelligent man. And he said when he was downloading this information that he felt like he was an ant. Literally, he said that was the level of consciousness that he felt he had compared with the consciousness that was being delivered to him through this system.
Wow.
So, yes, he suffered immensely. But, you know, fortunately, he was able to start broadcasting it very reluctantly at first, but he started putting it out into the world, and sure enough, it caught people's attention. It's out all over the world now. My books are out in 11 languages now, and very, very popular. I gather the Chinese version printing of it has just finished its 13th printing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, my experience of it is amazingly structured and leaves you room for, I always am fascinated by even words have levels and levels and levels and levels, always ascending meanings, don't they? You know, so
yes, indeed.
It has a lot of that. So talk to us about what that, before we leave the Rajneesh Osho thing, you have a few more things to say about that, I think, eh? Like, didn't you write jokes for him? Didn't you work on a joke? I love that part.
Yeah. Well, I remember in the early days when I first arrived there, you know, I was in this pretty serious state in my life. I'd gone through, you know, boarding school in England. I'd finished my engineering degree. I'd started traveling as an engineer. And it was all pretty serious stuff. And then I got to this kind of crisis in my life where nothing really made sense anymore. So in those early days with Osho, I was very, very serious. And his whole thing was, for goodness sake, lighten up. You know, life's a mystery. You know, don't make it a complication. And so, yes, indeed, towards the end, Osho, as I say, he'd come out and discourse every day. He would love telling jokes to people because, you know, apart from the great exercise you get when you're laughing, it's just you cannot think and be laughing at the same time. It's one or the other. And his great thing was people get out of your head, get into your heart, and from your heart, get into your being. And then you'll start really having a real experience of this life. So it was my great pleasure for a couple of years to be helping to supply jokes for his discourses every day. Yes.
Where did you get the jokes? Did you make them? I'm sorry.
So, we made up a lot of jokes. We had complete license. And political correctness was not necessarily encouraged. We could make jokes about anybody and anything. And of course, you know, there were certain people in the community that were kind of causing upset either personally to us or generally. And so we'd always find room to make jokes about them. And, you know, just so everybody could lighten up. There was nothing mean or nasty about it. It was just all in good fun. And, there was an amazing book that came from this. The book Osho titled it Take It Really Seriously. That was the name of his joke book.
I'm writing
Take
it down.
Really and The Backside Book of Jokes. That was the subtitle.
Is it still available?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, you can get it on Amazon. It's a
Oh,
little
great.
pricey, but it's the biggest joke book and the funniest joke book I've ever come across.
I think that Rajneesh, as he was called in the old days, is sort of misunderstood. I think he is a very, very powerful, deeply, deeply helpful spiritual mystic, but he was misunderstood because of all his Rolls Royces, for starters, right?
He made a joke out of that, you know. He said, "How many cars can you drive at once?" And he got all exactly the same. I think there were 94 Rolls-Royce Silver Spurs. They're all an identical design. They all had different colors, of course. But he just said, you know, it was amazing the number of letters and entreaties that he got from all over the place. Could I have one of your Rolls-Royces? You know, could he just, and it was the Rolls-Royce, you know, the insignia for that is RR.
Right.
And at the time, Reagan was the president and being pretty nasty towards Osho and his community. So
Right.
it was just, it was, he was kind of spoofing everybody with these cars. And, it, you know, you, if you can't get a joke, the funny thing was with these cars as well, he didn't own a single one of them.
No, I think
They
I
were
remember
all,
that story. That's great. Tell people.
yeah. It was just, you know, the American system is if you get credit, you know, you put down one money on one car. And you make your payments, then you can get a second car and you make payments for that. And then you get a third one and a fourth one. And the whole collection built up like that. I don't think a single one of them was actually owned outright. So when it was time for Osho to leave America, all the cars just got sold off all over the place. And
And people just thought he was a. It's how we all project on one another is amazing, because people just said he was a charlatan because he had so many cars, and people had a lot of sex in his ashram or something. We don't need to get into all that, but I often think of how people interpret what's going on is through a very tightened-lipped approach, would you say?
Yeah, people have been misled tremendously over the years. You know, you'd have to say that religion has caused so much trouble and strife in this world. Politics, you know,
Yes, sure.
politicians who have very particular ideas about stuff, you know, and where does that all come from? It's all borrowed knowledge. And yeah, the Osho really, his whole thing was giving the place a huge shake-up. And trying to get people over that all this, you know, all the dogma, all the creeds, all the belief systems, because they just cause trouble and they limit people in their lives.
So you say, get out of your head, get into your heart, stop worrying about what was, and get into being.
Well, it's a very simple thing, Veronica. The head, we all know the brain's got two sides to it. And, you know, we're flip-flopping from one side to the other. This looks good, that looks good, you know, and when you get to the heart, when you recognize your life from the heart, there is no quibbling. The heart is just very straightforward. This is the deal. This is what I'm engaged with. This is what has value for me. So it doesn't flip-flop at all. The heart is either present in something or not.
And there
And
are
that, you know,
those who say
very.
the heart is the greatest intuitive part of our nature as well. It knows everything that's coming up, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for women, the heart is a much easier place to access than it is for men. Men, we all get stuck in our head, so it's quite a job for us to get out of our head and get into our heart in the first place. But then the third step, you know, moving from this willfulness, you know, what I want and what I put my effort into in this lifetime, into the place of trust, which we call the being. You know, when we move from the heart to the being, it's much easier for men to do that than it is for women.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because, you know, the woman's natural place in the world is to engage with the world from her heart. But for men, it's not so natural. But when we've made that big jump out of our head and we say, okay, I'll let go of all this thinking about life and I'll move into my heart and get much more acquainted with that, then stepping into our being is much easier for us than it is for women. Yeah.
Well, that's so interesting. So that moves us very sweetly into the human design system. Because I'm going, okay, it's much easier for men to go into being and women to be in the heart, and not so easy to go into being. But then I'm going, okay, but what about your own personal design? And is there a human design structure for our civilization at this time, for the collective, for a country, for a city? Tell us about human design. Tell everybody
Okay.
everything about it.
Well, as I say, it this is a was an enormous gift that was given to this planet. Because, you know, we've been messing around with nuclear weapons and stuff, and we're not that terribly responsible. And people really don't understand why we can't put down war, why we can't finish fighting with each other and just get on with each other. I mean, I think it was like 50, 60 years ago, NASA took the photograph of planet Earth. We're all on the same boat here. And yet we haven't learned how to get on with each other, you know, and it's like, it's high time we did. So human design comes in as this amazing device to show us how to get on with each other, how to not only accept and respect our own life, but to also see that there's a design for everybody else as well. And we don't have to be antagonistic towards each other. We can actually learn to get along. And you just look at all of the energy that's put into military and fighting and borders and all the guns and bombs and stuff. If all that energy was put into something creative instead, I mean, it would be just the most incredible place altogether.
So, did you see Malala's posting on Facebook? Remember Malala, the young lady?
Oh, indeed.
Okay. And she posted something the other day saying if we could stop all military activities for 8 days, that would be enough money to school all the children in the world.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant to hear those number comparisons, isn't it?
So honestly speaking, we have to get to that. We have to move out of the present mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Who on earth are we fighting with, for goodness sake? Because when we look at the universe and we look at everything unified, we are just one. Mm-hmm. You know, whether we're just on the same planet together, but we are one and everything in the universe is interacting. So some people say, you know, violence is a natural thing for humanity. And no, it's absolutely not. It really is not a natural thing at all.
Well, I think it's natural if you're only at a certain level of consciousness.
And then you're going along with survival.
Yes.
And, you know, we're actually past survival stuff these days when we see how we can make resources in the world really work for us. So human design, as I say, it came in as this amazing gift. And it was downloaded by this man, and his name is Ra. He suffered immensely downloading it, but fortunately was able to put it out into the world. Mm-hmm. I got to study with him when he came to America. I used to live in Maui at the time, and I'd fly twice a year. Whenever he came to the United States, he would either be in New Mexico or in Arizona, and I'd go twice a year to go and join in with his classes and just absorb as much as I possibly could about this system. Practiced it immediately. I'd already been reading for people for many years before that, so it was kind of very easy to slip into giving readings with human design.
What were you reading, shadow or just?
No, I was reading people's hands mostly.
Okay.
Palm reading, cards, faces, auras, tea leaves, coffee grinds,
all kinds
of things. You know, we're in a hologram here. There's all kinds of ways of reading into life.
Right.
And
that's true.
Yeah. Everything's perfectly designed here. And it's just a case of kind of withdrawing from mental conditioning and just looking and trying to see really clearly into what it is that's really going on with somebody.
So why did he bring this in at this time? Or why was it downloaded at that time in 87? Was the purpose of it ever given? And does it have to do with world peace or the shift or...
You know, it's a funny thing that Ra, when he got this information, he said he experienced hearing this information from what he described as a voice. Mm-hmm. And it was basically a noise that was going off inside his head and was directing him to write down the system or write it out in certain ways. And the very first thing that he heard was what he described as the rave, R-A-V-E. And I've sat with this for many years. I talked with him about, you know, why did you get that word rave and where did that come from? And he said, honestly, he didn't know. But what he was given was what he called a rave chart. Now, I've looked into it so deeply that I've actually found out he misheard this word. What was being said to him was ray of love.
Oh, rays.
Ray of love.
Wow.
That's what this system's all about. It's a ray of love and it's basically when you read your ray of love in your human design, you see exactly what you gave yourself to live out in this lifetime. It is that crystal clear. So when you see your human design chart, you see you're living on this ray of love. You're what can I say? You're kind of a reflection of the universe for the moment in which you're born.
Like
And
your
it's a
astrology chart, then, sort of.
sort of like astrology, but not. Astrology, you know, generally speaking, I know quite a number of really, really good astrologers in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find is they can give great descriptions for where you are in life. They can give great pointers for things that are likely to show up on your road, on your card along the way. But it's not necessarily a self-empowerment device. Astrology is very good at pointing out or predicting or telling you which moves to make. But the information is coming from outside. The difference with human design is it puts you in present tense in your own life. So it gives you the power to be yourself in any situation that confronts you. So it gives you basically the indication of how to use your energy. You know, what are the circumstances that really are worthwhile for you to put your energy into in the first place? And then how to make decisions.
So let's break it into the categories so people at home have something to refer to. And I know you can have your free personal design drawn up on Chaitin's website as well, if you need to do that too.
Yeah. So human design for us all, human design for us all, spelt out in letters, FORALL. FORUSALL, humandesignforusall.com. You can go there, get a free report. You can go there, download free software, and draw up as many charts as you like. And so once you've got your chart, you'll see on the chart, we've got these categories written down: type, authority, and profile. And these are what we call the three keys in human design. The type, there are five of these different types. We each of us have one of these types for our lifetime. And we're surrounded by people with these other types. So it's worth finding out what these types are about. But we're talking about literally how do you use your energy. That's what the type's all about.
Okay.
Some people go getters. Some people just, you can't get and sit still for 5 minutes. They've just got to go, go, go. They've got to use their energy until they're exhausted. Other people are designed to sit on the bylines and just watch the world go by until they get drawn into something. So there are what we call energy types and non-energy types. So that's the first thing, is to understand what's your type. You, Veronica, you know, because we've talked in the past, you have what we call a manifesting generator chart, manifesting generator design. So tons of energy. And the whole thing for you is to really find out, you know, what is it's really worth my while putting energy towards? What's really interesting for me? What really draws my attention and sustains my interest? So knowing that you've got all this energy, but the possibility of frittering the energy away into things that aren't worthwhile. You know, that's the first portion. So then the second key that we have is what we call authority, and that's how we make decisions on our own behalf in any circumstance. So that's why I say human design puts you in present tense.
Okay.
Because anything that confronts you, you've got your own inner authority. And I'm not talking about mental decisions on stuff. I'm talking about energetic decisions from within your body, using that great intelligence that our body has. And for you, you have emotions, authority. So you're very much a feeling person.
That's true.
So you, and it's just in this world, for you realizing you've got all this energy, for you to be able to put that energy towards something that's really worthwhile for you, then it comes down to, well, how do I feel about this? I'm being presented with all these different avenues, all these different things I could get involved with. How do I really feel about it? And we know about feelings. They go up and down. Sometimes something looks fabulous. The next day, it looks completely uninteresting. You meet somebody one day and you think they're the greatest person you've ever met. The next time you see them, it's like, what? Why did I see them so great about them? So feelings basically is one of the reasons that, if I can say there's a reason for human design coming into this world, it's for us to come in touch with our feelings, because emotions carry us into all kinds of different arenas. We can get intensely excited about something, and then when we actually arrive there, we find it's not interesting for us at all. Or we can be completely uninterested in something, and then all of a sudden we find out actually we feel really good with it. And it's the same in our relationships. It's the same with our neighbors. It's the same with the work that we do. It's the same with the things that we buy for ourselves in life. That having emotional clarity is a very important thing. and realizing what looks so exciting one minute can look completely the opposite the next. So how do you find the balance in that? And so we say, particularly for you and for me as well, I have this emotional authority as well, like you have. We have to come to a still point. And the still point is not connected with expectations of how it's supposed to be turning out.
Mm.
And the more one gives attention to that feeling quality, that still point, then the clearer and clearer and clearer we get in our lives. That yes, we can show great excitement for something, but not be attached to that excitement as though it's got to keep on going forever. You know, it's just, okay, in this moment, it's really exciting. This is wonderful. Knowing that also the other side of the wave is going to come as well. So emotions, yes, very, very important for people to understand about emotions. There are those people, Veronica, who have the emotion center not colored in, and they get intensely affected by emotional people around them, to the point where they just want to back away and just be out of that emotional environment.
So what are the percentages of people who are emotional and people who are backing away, that sort of thing?
Well, it's probably about 60-40, something like that.
Okay.
60% have emotions, but what generally happens when we put two charts together, we look like at a partnership, a relationship, we get up to about 90% are emotional partnerships.
Oh, really?
So the person without the defined emotion in their own chart is very affected by their partner and all the emotion that their partner brings with them.
So they should not be in a relationship like that, or they should?
There's no shoulds in this lifetime, Veronica.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that.
You know, whenever you apply a word like should, could, would, might, must, these are all mental prerogatives.
Okay.
You know, they're all borrowed knowledge. They're all coming from outside. They're all, well, you know, you're supposed to be behaving like this. And this world requires of us to live in present tense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where the truth resides.
So the question I asked you is a matter of you teaching, or the human design teaches us how to recognize and not project upon the person who doesn't have the emotional swell, or vice versa. Is that right? I mean, we manage it better if we know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You're exactly right on that. It's just, there are no shoulds in this lifetime. It's like there's only awareness. There's only intelligence. And the world would be very, very dull if people did not embrace their emotional side. So even if you don't have the emotion center colored in, this is a world to experience pleasure. And if you back away from it, if you back out of the emotional environment altogether, then you'll be denying yourself this whole amazing aspect of what it is to be human. So absolutely, people with an undefined emotion center, without that center active in their design, it's wonderful for them to get involved with people that do have it colored in and activated. But what the bottom line here is, everybody has their own authority. So I'm saying somebody with a defined emotions like you and I have, our authority is to be clear emotionally before we get involved in anything.
Okay.
But those people that don't have it colored in, they have their own perfect authority. You know, they can find out for themselves what are the times when it's appropriate for them to include themselves in company that is emotionally excitable, and when to take a leave. So it's what happens is when emotions get out of hand, and there's an argument, there's a discussion, there's a potential fight, there's a potential fallout. What can happen there is those people that have the center undefined can amplify the emotion by getting involved in it, by not listening to their own authority and saying that probably says to them, back down, this is not a good time to be in an argument. And they just get involved in the argument, and then the thing snowballs. So those like you and I that have defined emotions, we've got to be very, very clear that we have an effect on the people around us. We have an emotional effect on them.
Hmm.
And it's our responsibility to gauge this and to see when somebody starts getting all upset emotionally, it's probably because they're getting triggered by the emotional energy that we're bringing into that situation.
So what's that person's authority if it's not an emotional authority?
Well, it could be one of the other five different authorities. There are six authorities in all. It could be a sacral authority, which would be a gut response. Okay. And they could just say to themselves, I can see the situation is getting a little heated here. do I need to stick around for this? And their gut response might say, maybe not, you know, time to leave. So in that case, their authority, their own inner guidance would be saying, later, let's get out of here. And let this person who's all emotionally upset about something or other find their own still point and their own clarity. And you can look back over time and see all the wars, all the upsets, all domestic violence, all addictions, if you will. It all comes out of emotional imbalance. People get overexcited about something, they lose it. And then, you know, there's no withdrawing from the actions that they live out.
I think that's very interesting. What's another authority? I like that, actually. I'm thinking about it a lot.
Yeah, there are some people that have what we call splenic authority, and these are the people that are the quickest. They just make these snap second decisions on things, like instantaneous, got it, got the details, got the facts, don't need anything else. Yeah,
I know people like that.
Yeah, you know, the classic viewing of this I have is that if somebody with a splenic authority goes along with somebody who has emotional authority to the movies. And, you know, outside the movie theater, there's all these different posters. And the emotional authority person, like yourself or myself, will look at the poster and will kind of start going into the whole concept of what the movie's going to be about. And we'll get drawn into the poster. The person with splenic authority will take one look at the poster and just say, I don't want to see it, or that's the one I want to see. They'll just get, you know, just like that. They'll just get it. Instant recognition. So...
do they have terrible tempers? Do they have tempers, or does that have a relevance? Is that correlated?
Everybody can find a temper. Okay. Everybody can find passion. Yeah, it's. I would say, you know, temper mostly gets expressed through emotion. So again, we have to get those of us that are triggering people's emotions. We have to get very, very clear about, you know, exactly the effect we have on the people around us. And those are the people that get triggered emotionally by other people in their life. You know, again, they really have to look. Why are they giving away their energy to somebody else? Why are they getting all excited about somebody else's emotional effect on them? We all have to take responsibility. And that's part of the beauty of human design is once you understand your design, you'll know exactly where your responsibilities lie.
I have to say most people don't understand it. Continue with the authorities, because I think that's also very interesting, because you referred to wars and you referred to abuse and domestic abuse and all these things. I'm going, wow, we just don't understand as a species what triggers me or what I have somebody that I love who gets mad at me all the time. I mean, it's incredible. And the rage that comes up. And if you heard the sequence, you'd go, huh, what was that all about? You know? So,
well, yeah.
I mean, I'm flummoxed. I'm like, oh, I don't know. It's almost scary, you know? So what would that be? And if you look at world wars, you go, okay, well, there's some of that in there too, huh?
Yes, it is. And, we know about you in your design, Veronica. You know, you have a very powerfully defined emotional center. So it's impossible for you to walk into a room and not affect everybody in that room emotionally on one level or another. So you're just having a wonderful day, you know, and you're walking into a room and maybe there's a whole group of people in there, some you know, some you don't know. But every single one of those people is going to be affected by the fact that you just crossed the threshold going into that room emotionally.
So they might have been triggered enough to be annoyed with me.
So, well, let's look at how they get triggered.
Okay.
Supposing, you know, 3 years old, they're on the playground at the kindergarten and somebody throws a piece of mud at them and their fight ensues and they get all upset and hot and bothered and they never get over it. They never do any therapy. They never get clear about what it was that happened when they were 3 years old, you know, what it was that disturbed them. So go forward, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, they've still got this little thing going on in their unconscious. And it's an emotional trigger. And at the time you walk into the room, they're standing next to somebody that looks just like that little person that threw mud at them. But your arrival in the room triggers the emotional reaction in them. So energetically, they're just picking up on, you know, something that happened to them a long time ago that they never got clear about.
But isn't it remarkable that any of us gets along at all when you put it into such a almost a morass of hidden detail that triggers us, eh?
You know, it's not so very much hidden. That's the funny thing about it. You know, you can look at any time you get upset about something, and you can go back, you know, where was that instance in my life where this happened for the first time? You know, it's just an echo of that same reaction from years ago.
But are there not past lives that it could have come from that perhaps we don't remember?
There are past seconds, you know.
That we could not remember, maybe, huh?
I mean, honestly speaking, you know, what do we get? We get echoes and echoes and echoes until we get something. So we can go into karma, we can go into upset, we can go into past lives, we can go anything we want. And, you know, I had this put right in my face long time ago when I was in Nepal. I'll just tell the story very briefly, but I was having dinner with these friends in Kathmandu years ago. And there was this sadhu, you know, one of these guys that dresses up in orange with a begging bowl. And he was friends with the couple that I was sitting with at the table. And they invited him in to come and sit down and join us for dinner. And he spent his whole dinner talking to this couple, completely ignoring me.
Oh,
and I got really upset
annoying.
About it.
Yeah.
Well, yes. You know, and he was telling all this magical mystery stuff, you know, this esoteric stuff. Fascinating. And I said, well, haven't you got anything to tell me? And he turns to me and says, full moon birthday. And turns back and starts talking to the friends again.
What?
And he's right. I was born on a full moon, and he could see that about me. So then, you know, that goes on for another 20 minutes. And then I get, you know, I'm starting to steam. Come on, you must tell me something else. And he turns to me and says, there are many lifetimes, Baba. This lifetime is the most important.
Ah.
And it was so crystal clear what he told me. You know, we got echoes and echoes and echoes. We've done everything, lifetimes upon lifetimes, all kinds of different dimensions. And here we are in this lifetime. This is the lifetime where we have the opportunity and the chance to get it, where we came from, what the whole agenda was, you know, otherwise we're just spinning our wheels here. And
so you're saying like the purpose of our existence, not just this lifetime, but the purpose of our existence should become clear in this lifetime. Is that what you're saying?
The purpose of our existence is to be.
Well, that's easier for men than women, because Chaitin just told me that.
Well, you'll know, Veronica, the things that you get tangled up in, you know, because you contribute your heart into things. And thank goodness you do. You know, this world would be an absolute disaster area if we were all living from our heads all the time.
Well, that's true.
So thank goodness, you know, women have the intelligence to live from their heart.
And how the human personal human design works, doesn't it show, and I'm going into two subjects at once, I'm sorry, but doesn't it show that some men may come from the heart more easily than others? Some will emphasize that, some won't. You know what I mean? It's not just
certainly.
Sexuality.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, it was a generalization in a way, but, you know, some men are born into women's bodies, some women are born into men's bodies. It's just, you know, we're made up of both, male and female. It's just somewhere along the way, one sex is chosen over the other. But yeah, certainly there are men that have a tremendous heart, and that's how they always live. And there are some women that have the most extraordinary mental capacity, and that's how they live. So yeah.
But if you talk about human design patterns, or the beautiful chart,
Yeah.
Mine will look different than someone else's, right? Do you want to finish the little list of authorities so we can get on with the other stuff? Because I don't want to leave people going, oh, come on, he only got to four.
So we were talking about authorities.
Okay.
And there are six of these different authorities. So the emotions authority, as I say, overrides all the other authorities. And those of us that have emotional authority, we have to get crystal clear of how to find that still point inside us that is not attached to outcomes.
Okay.
Then we have what we call sacral authority, which is the gut response. And the gut response is literally a movement of energy from the lower belly. And it either goes, interesting, or not now. And it's an instant recognition. This is calling to me. This is something I may put energy into, or not now. It's come at the wrong time. I'm already busy enough.
So it's more decisive.
Very decisive. Mm-hmm. Then we have the splenic authority, which you talked about, you know, the people going to the movie and the splenic authority looks at the poster and, no, that one's not for me, or that one I want to see. So very, very quick. They're always on, 24/7. They're always on. They live through intuition and instinct. Hmm. Very, very pristine, exact, decisive. Then there's what we call the willful authority. And literally we say about willful authority, what I want is what needs to happen. And so people with that authority, they very often say, well, what about everybody else? You know, if it's okay if I get what I want, what about everybody else? And what we found is the design is so perfect that if they live by that standard, whatever they want is what needs to happen, then they'll find that everybody else gets their needs met too.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And because that, hey, isn't that true that that's, if we're in our true nature, that is actually true. We support the true needs of other people as well, don't we?
Exactly that. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a classic example of somebody with that authority was Al Gore.
Oh.
And in that decisive time when the election was in the balance, you know, if he had gone ahead with what he wanted rather than what all his people were telling him to do, he'd have creamed that election altogether.
Hmm.
But he, you know, he had to reinvent himself according to all the experts and, you know, came out as half-baked instead of full-on. But, you know, we have to be grateful that he then put all his energy into something very different, the, you know, the world economy, the world climate.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the authorities, you know, what you want is what needs to happen. And then the self-authority, that's a very, very delicate authority. It's fairly rare.
What did you call it? Self?
Self-authority.
I thought you meant selfie or cell phone.
if I can say one or two people that have this authority, Barbara Streisand has this authority. And we'll know about how very, very gifted but different she is.
Yes, and determined about what she wants, is it?
Yeah, Mick Jagger's got this authority. You know, how do you duplicate Mick Jagger? Impossible, you know? So these are a couple of people that have this authority. They're just very, very particular in how they aim themselves in life and what they carry through on. I have to say, you know, generally speaking, it's a very sensitive authority. So people with that authority, they have to disregard a lot of the input that other people are giving them. Yeah. Steven Spielberg also has that authority. You know, the guy's an absolute genius.
Yes, he is.
And he goes his own way. And that's how he plays out this self-authority. And then the sixth one of these authorities is what we call outer authority. And these are people that they either just have mental definition or they have what we call a reflector chart. And they're very much canvassing what goes on around them. So if a situation comes into their life and they have to make a decision about it, what we recommend for somebody with this outer authority is to do a lot of research, Google things, you know, talk with people about them, get everybody else's input on things, and just see what's the frame of reference around what it is that's been presented to me here. And what happens is if they allow themselves a full month to come to a realization on something, they will then be the most informed person on whatever that issue is.
Hmm.
Because they'll have checked into every single resource. And so they come across as very, very wise people in the end. And you might say, well, how on earth can somebody make a decision in a month and manage in this world? And I'm just talking particularly about, you know, the really essential items in life. You know, if you're going to get married, you know, if you're going to buy a house or, you know, what kind of job you're going to do. That kind of thing is like it really, they will do full research on something and then come to a very, very clear understanding of what it is that's really being presented to them and whether they're going to get involved with it or not.
Well, those of us who have the emotional authority, we kind of get lost in decision at times because of the emotional swell, don't we? I mean,
easily done, yes.
So when you're talking outer authority, I go, well, there's some overlap there about how some of the influences could affect your true nature, huh?
With emotional authority, there is always that possibility of finding exactly what you need to find out of any situation. But it does come from a period of time of actually watching how emotion gets to be played out.
Oh, okay.
You know, as a child, emotionally, Veronica, you'll have seen yourself, you know, something bright and shiny in front of you. You'll have gone racing towards it, jump right into it. And, you know, there will have been some moments when it was absolutely fabulous and other moments when you find out, oh, well, that was a complete waste of time.
Right.
And then, you know, as life goes on and you say, oh, there's another of those shiny things. You know, last time I jumped into that, it didn't work out so well. So maybe I'll just kind of pause a little bit and find out what the other side of it's all about. And so as life goes on, you get more and more of these instances. And then you start realizing, my goodness, you know, from this moment in time, I see a bright, shiny thing being presented to me. I have this backlog of understanding of all the different aspects of these kinds of things. And I don't need to be attached to how I suppose those things were supposed to turn out. Mm. I can actually feel in my belly at this moment in time, right now, whether I feel the inclination to get involved in it or not. And that feeling, that still point feeling, has the reference of all these other instances. But it has this great intelligence of seeing I'm absolutely connected to this circumstance right in this moment in time.
Mm. And it doesn't matter where it came from, where the mapping came from, because I know, for example, in my, I keep going back to mine because it's easy to refer to something that we've shared before. But you said that I had these, I can't remember what they're called in my chart, that it showed that a stream of the ancestral link came through my maternal grandmother and another yes. stream through my father, both of which have affected my behavior in the moment or perhaps my use of emotions. I don't remember exactly, but I know there was an ancestral link. And I'm going, isn't that, do you want to talk about that a little bit, or isn't that something we're supposed to kind of neutralize or...
No, no, far from it. This is something that we have to clarify for our ancestry.
Oh, okay.
I mean, let's face it, Veronica, we're in an age of awakening.
Yes, we are.
You know, we go back to three generations and everyone's in war, you know, world war or, you know, poverty or, you know, bubbles and depressions and stuff.
Slavery, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're, you know, this is a time where we have to engage in clearing things up for the whole family tree. And it can be done. I've watched it happen. So human design, we might, you know, we've said, all right, it's a little bit like astrology, but up to a very small point, it's like astrology. With human design, we get calculations that show us the whole genetic input that we have, not only from our parents, but for four generations back.
For four generations, okay.
Yeah. So all this genetic input coming out of our ancestry, coming from the family that we chose to arrive in, you know, all of it's there, imprinted in our DNA. And this comes in what we call the unconscious in human design. And it's just there. And we can, when we make the calculations, we can see all this information. So I like to tease everybody I read for and say, look, you know, this information here, there's 10 years worth of talking to a shrink to get all this information. But with human design, all we did was click the mouse and here it is. You can see exactly what you've inherited. From your dad, you've got this very, very spirited nature. Very spirited nature. And from your mother's side, you've got a very strongly sacral energy. So your whole life journey has been balancing between the sacral and the sacred.
Oh.
One foot in the side.
Well, with my father, the spirited one, is that what you're calling sacred?
Yes.
Mm. Okay.
That was the genetics that he passed on to you.
Isn't that interesting? I wouldn't have thought it that way. But so when we're doing, wait a minute. I said something, and I know that you've got an up and coming, amazing research project book of other lives and incarnations. And I want you to say a tiny bit about that. But a while back, we were referring to past lives, and you were essentially saying, well, you don't really have to get into that. It's life right now. But obviously, there is research that you're doing for a brilliant reason. I know that.
Well, so. Honestly speaking, Veronica, all of us can benefit greatly from looking at past life information up okay. to a point. But, you know, it's like going into a library and reading books on books and books.
Mm-hmm.
you know, that Sadhu was right. This lifetime is the most important because this is where we actually get access to the present moment.
Right.
But sure enough, you know, all of us have lived out all kinds of different things in all kinds of different dimensions. I just want to say, before we move on to talk about the incarnations, I would like to address the input that you got from your mother's mother, your maternal grandmother.
Please, I'd love that.
She gave you this whole sensation of justice. There has to be fair play in this world. And it doesn't matter how convoluted or contrived situations are, that people have to get a fair shake. And that's something in your bones. That's something in your deep, deep situation in life, is making sure that people get a fair deal.
Yes, I think that's very true.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's cost a great deal of emotion.
No doubt about it.
But yeah, it's a very, very painful and perplexing feeling or drive in this time on the planet. I guess the planet's always had its seething torments, but there's a lot going on. There's a lot of like fires and wars and poverty and sicknesses and so on. Can you see, is there human design for our species at this point? I mean, you know what I mean? Is it just a general personal, or is there a global picture, or are there global pictures?
Well, as I said, you know, this information is going out into the world very fast, and cultures that have been denied access to their personal identity are snapping it up. Like, my book is huge in Bulgaria.
Yeah.
There's a Russian coming out soon. You know, Russian people cannot get enough of this. As I said, the Chinese book is in its 13th printing already.
Wow.
And, you know, that's in 2 years. Like, people are desperate to have this information. They need to find their identity and what they're about in this lifetime, because they've been cogs in a machine forever. We all have, one way or another. And that's finished.
Well, I feel like, if, you know, we already spoke about awakening a tiny wee bit, and I keep feeling like this is an example of, if enough people wake up, we can absolutely tip over the crazy, egregious power problems that are going on all over the planet, right? We can do it fast.
Yeah.
So you're giving a reason why it could happen very quickly, right?
Well, it needs to happen very quickly, because there are some people that are completely crazy, and, you know, they're not responsible. My great thing at the moment is watching the children that are coming into the world, because they're just not interested in anything to do with our generation at all. You know, the concept of war is like, it's incredible for them. They cannot get there at all.
Mm-hmm.
They can't find about anything about racial troubles. They don't really understand people's religious dogma and stuff. The average age in Iran these days is something like 26 years old.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the country is being run by these guys that are in their 80s and 90s and stuff, you know, that have no idea about what the young people are actually interested in. They've got all these crusty ideas about things. So, yeah, I have great hopes for this world, you know, and human design is just a great device to tell people, yeah, this is your story. This is the deal. This is what works for you. Try it, you know, and you'll find the great intelligence in looking at your human design and working with it. And we work out the type, authority. You work with these two keys and everything will start changing in your life, because you're coming from your own source. That's the point of the whole thing. You're not going along with somebody else's rule system. So you asked me about the book I've been writing.
Yes, I'm very interested in that too.
Well, the book has just been picked up by New World Library. It's going to come out in October of 2016. So a little bit of a pause before that can be seen. But I've spent, and I'm kind of slightly embarrassed to say this, I spent 19 years writing this book.
Oh, my. Why are you embarrassed? It just tells me that if it's many, many incarnations, you can't write it in a thumbnail in a moment.
Well, you know, it's had many rewrites. And there are 192 of these incarnation themes. All of us have one of these themes for our lifetime.
Oh,
and
for many lifetimes? Like, I have the same theme for other lifetimes as well?
My sense with you, Veronica, is this lifetime is very particular for you. The incarnation theme for you is called the Sleeping Phoenix.
Oh.
So the Harry Potter kind of talked a little bit about the phoenix, you know, this magical bird.
Yes.
A tear from the phoenix could solve anything, and a drop of blood would cure anything. And just a magical bird. So that you know you've always carried this kind of mysterious quality within you. And the sleeping phoenix basically means, you know, you've always been ahead of your time. Right from the very beginning of this life, you're always tuning into things that, you know, 10, 15, 20 years later, people would catch on to.
Yes. And they think you're lying.
Yeah, they think you're crackers.
Yeah. You're a nutcase. Who would have said that? And very, yeah. very, very rarely do they come back and say, oh, you said that, you know, yes. Very rarely, right?
Yeah. Well, there it is, you know. But you'll see more and more the age is beginning to catch up with you. You're still ahead of the game, but slowly, slowly people are catching up. So about these incarnation themes, as I say, there's 192 of them. All of us select one of these themes for our lifetime. And it's very particular. And it's when you understand about your life theme, this incarnation theme of yours, this kind of destiny that you've agreed to play out, it's a little bit like the music in a movie, the theme music. It's a music that keeps showing up again and again and again throughout your lifetime. That this theme will always be running as an undercurrent in your lifetime. There are people that have an incarnation theme we call the laws. And basically their whole life is about rearranging things in ways that suit the present moment. Because people, they have laws and, oh, you know, this is the rule, this is how we have to live things. And people with this incarnation, they will say, look at that and say, well, actually, it's not working for anybody anymore. We need to rearrange it. So they're constantly rearranging the environment for us. There are people that are born in the incarnation we call the life plane. And they are here to help people in really difficult circumstances. That's what they do. So they very often find themselves in a role of a coach or a counselor or something like that, because it's natural and easy for them to help people out of awkward situations. So many, many of these different themes. And as I say, it's now going to be in a book and New World Library will bring it out.
But tell me this, do you use the human design mapping system chart to discover some of these themes, or which theme was mine in this life? Is that what you use it for?
Well, that's why it took me 19 years, because I've read for many thousands of people over the years and looked at so many different charts. And sometimes one needs to kind of look into a chart very deeply in the lifetime that the person's living out and, you know, talk to them a little bit about what they're doing in their life. And it gives extra clues to exactly how they're playing out this incarnation of themselves. So, yeah, the people I've read for and talked with over the years are the major contributors to this book.
Well, and I'm going to have to sign off with you, and I don't want to because I'm just getting all excited about the kinds of questions I can ask you and the information you can share. So this book, your next book is not coming up till October 16, but for people to look into human design between now and then would be really advisable, wouldn't it?
It is the essential tool for this time. I can't tell you now, ever since I heard about it in 1979, ever since I found it in 1993, I've devoted my whole life to it. Wow. I mean, this is what I do. And it's anybody I meet, I don't care what their life circumstances, they can benefit from understanding what their design is. Mm-hmm. And it's very simple. They can get a copy of the book, Human Design, Discover the Person You Were Born to Be. HarperCollins published this, and as I say, it's out in all kinds of languages now. They can go on our website. They can get their own free report on our website, which will tell you at least the first key, your type. It'll tell you all about your type. You can get a comprehensive report on our website. It's $19.95 and two for $29.95 if you want to know what your partner's design is. And it'll tell you all about yourself. And humandesignforusall.com, that's where you'll find these things.
I laugh because these days it's been fashionable for people to say, it's not all about you, you know, and I go, well, actually it is. Until I know all about me, I can't figure out where I'm going to impact you, right?
Yeah, it's beautifully put.
And they always crack up laughing and go, you're so cheeky. And I go, yeah, I think we have to be because you have to break all these mystiques that come and cloak us, don't we?
We've been so misled for so long about this, that, and the other that has nothing to do with us. I mean, you watch, we come into this world, you get born into a family that's got all kinds of ideas about life, that they borrowed it from their family before them.
And they're
You
not
go to
even
school.
happy, half of them.
Well, of course not, because they're living on things that aren't authentic for them. Then
That's
you go
right.
to school, you learn about everybody else, nothing about yourself at all. You come out of school, you don't know a thing about money, you don't know anything about relationship, and you get plugged into the system and get a job or whatever, and you just don't get any happier with that either. So we're just, we're bombarded by all this stuff that has nothing to do with our personal nature. And it's as you say, if you don't find out about yourself, you're really in trouble in this life.
Yes, especially now because, ladies and gentlemen, we're waking up. This is Chaitin Parkin. It's Chaitin, I think, eh? Parkin, if you want to tell people how to find you.
Well, please go to our website. That's the quickest, easiest, most straightforward way. Go to our website, Human Design for Us All. Human Design, FORUSALL.com, humandesignforusall.com. Go on the site there. You'll find a very easy way to get your own free report. If you're feeling a little bit more adventurous, get your comprehensive report and
get
buy
the
a copy.
Book. Yeah.
Get the book. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a wonderful book. But Chaitin, I'm so glad that we got to talk again, and I look forward to speaking with you again, especially when the next book comes out.
Oh, I look forward to it too, Veronica. Always a pleasure talking with you.
You
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye.